I have an inspirational and also very informational episode for you guys today. Today, I chat with Too Much to Handle listener Abby, who has recently been diagnosed with a disability. Now, as she struggles to balance her new needs with the obstacles inherent in college and just life in general, I invite expert Kia Brown to help Abby learn to thrive despite her new disability and help all of us become better allies to our differently abled friends. Now, Kia Brown is a disability rights activist, an author, a journalist, a writer, and she is also known as the creator of the viral hashtag, #DisabledAndCute. Oh yeah, and she's doing all of that and killing life while living with cerebral palsy. So obviously, she was the perfect and insanely inspirational person to help guide us through today's episode.
When I was growing up, I was always told that I was too much to handle. I was too loud, too opinionated, too demanding, just plain too much. Now, as an adult, I celebrate these qualities within myself and within the women I know. This is a call to action. This is a space to own your too muchness. This is Too Much to Handle.
So excited to welcome Too Much to Handle listener Abby to the show. Hi, Abby.
Hello.
I am so excited to meet you in person. I feel like we have had an Instagram friendship for many a years. I feel like I've seen you grow up. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And although we've exchanged DMs in the past, you recently sent me a DM asking about how to navigate life with different abilities. You said,
"Right,
I have a heart condition, and because of it, I am considered disabled. It's pretty hard navigating life so far with that diagnosis, but I'm slowly learning." You also said, "It can be super debilitating," and asked, "How can you deal with a disability while still being successful in college or a career?" So first up, thank you for sharing and for opening up. I am just so grateful and appreciative of your time and your vulnerability. And second, I wanna let you know that you are not alone. So while representation around different abilities needs a lot of work, 61 million adults in the US are living with a disability, and 1 in 4 women have a disability. So my guess is that your question resonates with a significant portion of our audience. So again, thank you for bringing it up. Is there anything else that you can sort of expound upon so we can sort of understand your circumstance?
Right. So I am a sophomore in college right now. And last year, my freshman year, I ended up getting a traumatic brain injury. And it was something that we didn't think was very serious, and it ended up morphing into a heart condition. So I have POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And it can come about in a few different ways: serious illness, childbirth, and then head injury are some of the main ways that you can get POTS. So I was dealing with that diagnosis my freshman year of college at university, and that was really, really hard. And then just having to navigate that diagnosis and my cardiology appointments and my neurology appointments, and I just had a heart surgery on top of the schoolwork and the internships that I'm applying to and building up my educational background so that I can have a good career in the future has been incredibly, incredibly difficult.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly difficult. Again, I just want to thank you for opening up. And I do want to talk through this more and dive into some of the nuances that come with getting sort of a diagnosis like this, but also just dealing with the physical aspect of it as well. I will not pretend to be an expert on this matter at all. So I want to bring in Kia Brown, who is an expert. She is actually a disability rights activist. She's an author, a journalist, and a writer. She is also known as the creator of the hashtag disabled and cute, which first went viral in February of 2017 and caught the attention of such celebrities as Sophia Bush and Brie Larson. She is also the author of the book, The Pretty One, on life, pop culture, disability, and other reasons to fall in love with me. Hi, Kia. How are ya?
Hi, I'm great. How are you guys?
We are so good. We are so honored to have you here as an expert. I would love if you could share with Abby and our audience, if they don't know you already or are not familiar with your story already, a little bit more about who you are and how you got here.
Sure thing. First of all, hi, Abby. I love your question.
Hi.
And I'm a writer and a journalist, and I freelance write for places like Teen Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Marie Claire UK, The Rumpus, so all those places. But I'm also a human being, which I'm sure you can realize. And I know that it's very hard to navigate a world when the world's not designed for people like you. And so the work that I do tends to be about identity. So whether I'm talking to a celebrity about a TV show or a movie they're doing, or I'm talking about my own lived reality in nonfiction essays and stuff, I find that we can connect no matter who we are, where we come from, through the sort of politics of identity. And for me, I know that disability isn't easy, and I don't have a heart condition, but I do know what it's like to feel uncomfortable and not know what to do next, or not know if you can do the things you want to do in your disabled body. So I guess, I think my best advice to you is to remember that there are people doing the thing that you are doing right now. And there are also people who have done it. So I went to school at a college called SUNY Fredonia. I live in Western New York. It's cold here. It always snows. It's disgusting. But I got a degree in journalism. And even when I was very unsure of whether or not I could do it, because I was like tired, sometimes I couldn't walk to my classes. Some days it was just my body aching. I did it. And I think what can help you is knowing that you can do it, even when you're tired, even with all the appointments that you're going through, all of the work on top of it. What helped me was honestly getting in touch with disability services, because it allowed my professors to know that I needed extra time to do certain things, or that there were going to be times when I was late to class, not because I didn't want to show up, but because my body was like, hey, no, you got to rest a couple minutes first. And so I know it's not easy adjusting to it, especially because I was born with my cerebral palsy, so I've been used to it since 1991. But coming into it can't in any way be easy for you.
Yeah, Abby, so you said you're still learning how to navigate your life with your diagnosis because you just recently received your diagnosis. What sort of, you know, Kia brought up reaching out to disability services and things like that. What sort of, I guess, obstacles have you faced thus far trying to manage both college and your different ability?
Right. So I actually work really closely with disability services at my school. I go to a university in Southern California, and it's really hot all the time. And so heat is a big trigger for my condition. Mm-hmm. So I do work really closely with disability services, and they email my professors and talk to them basically about why sometimes I am too ill to come to class, why I have to turn in certain assignments late, things like that. Kind of along with what Kia was saying about sometimes I just need more time for my body to adjust before I can go. And then also walking to class, getting the transportation aspect has been a really big struggle. I actually recently got a disabled placard for my car. And so using that on campus has been like a big mental jump for me, because it's really, I don't want to say it's embarrassing, but it's not, it makes me feel bad about myself that I have to use it. And so that's been a really big struggle. But along with it too, it's juggling when to go to my specialist. What if I have class at that time? You know, what if I forget to take my medication one day and then I can't go to class the next? So it's a lot about just staying on top of a routine and a schedule, which is really hard to do when you're a college student.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you what I did that might help. I set alarms on my phone for all of the medications or whatever it was that I had to take. And then if I knew that I wasn't going to be able to go to class, I emailed the professor literally as soon as I knew. Even if the class started like seconds before, I would just email them and let them know. And then as far as like the placards go, I know it probably seems weird or like you don't deserve to have it, or you just feel like, you know, why am I using this thing? But the thing is, you're using it because you need it. And I know that it's a lot because of our cultural perception of them and disability as a whole, but you have to do what's best for you in terms of you being able to get through your day and get to where you need to go. And so, yeah, it's weird, I guess, like using the placard when you're at school or when you need to drive somewhere, but it also is going to help you live a life that you can be, you know, happy with or proud of. And I think that sometimes we get caught up in the perception of others, but I'm sure that most of the students that you come across aren't even paying attention to the fact that you have one in your car.
Yeah, I think you guys both bring up a really interesting point, both the internalized stigma that you're feeling, Abby, and maybe the stigma that is, you know, coming from others and the way that our society as a whole deals with different abilities. I want to get into more specifics to help Abby sort of navigate life again. So going through college, which is hard enough as it is, and then going out into the quote unquote real world. But before that, I think it only makes sense to have a conversation about how those of us who are more able-bodied can support those with different abilities, because the onus should not just be on those with different abilities. The onus should be on us with able bodies to make it so that it doesn't seem that much of a distinction.
That's a lot of work. It's hard sometimes to think about the larger cultural change in terms of like non-disabled people. I find that it's really just being able to talk about it and stick up for people that you see who need it, and know that you have to talk to the people in your life who are also able-bodied and who also sort of perpetuate these ideals, and it'll allow the rest of us disabled people to be able to not feel that intense stigma, because it's taught to us. You know, even if it is internal, like Abby talked about, it's still taught to you at a very young age. Like, you know, don't look at that person. They're a wheelchair user. You know, like, don't ask this person a question. Don't say this thing. Don't say that thing. But in doing that, we push people like me or people like us to the outskirts of society. And so that's why we internalize these things. I went through a really long period of my life not being comfortable in my body and feeling like I should hate myself because I am the way that I am. And I found that once I started talking about it to other people and talking about it in therapy, thank goodness, I learned to like the person that I am and understand that there's nothing wrong with being disabled, that there's nothing wrong with not fitting into these sort of Eurocentric beauty standards or ideals, or even just not being able-bodied. And I think the work that people have to do who are not disabled is sort of challenge their own biases and say to themselves, you know what, I'm going to recognize that this is who I was, or this, these are the things that I think, and work on them myself without asking to put the onus, like you said, on disabled people.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I've found in my own experience that it's always better to ask the questions that you have rather than make assumptions.
Yes, at least for me. I mean, I don't want to speak for the entire community, but I find that I'm more susceptible to people asking questions first than them just being like, I'm going to make this assumption and talk to you really slowly, which I hate. People do that to me all the time. But yeah, asking questions is the best, at least in my opinion.
And Abby, do you have a community of people that you're talking to about what you're going through? Do you have a social group or, like Hia mentioned, a therapist? I'm the biggest proponent of therapy that you'll ever find. Tell me a little bit about the people that you are calling on for your support system right now.
Right. So even since the beginning of my diagnosis, it's been really hard to form a support system, I think, because I don't have a physical disability. I am someone who has an invisible illness because other than a scar from a recent heart procedure, you can't tell by looking at me that I am sick. And so it's not even the people that already supported me were still supporting me in the same way because they couldn't understand that if they couldn't see it, it was still there. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a lot of educating people around me, especially like my mom and my grandma and the people that have always been my support system, but kind of morphing that support system into a different kind of support has been really important. And so with that, it's been educating my friends because not a lot of college students understand what a chronic illness or an invisible illness is, and that you can look perfectly normal with having this disability. And so it's been educating the people around me. I have been going to a therapist, and he actually works with a lot of people with chronic illnesses, which has been incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. So talking to him, just talking to people honestly online and looking at different blog posts and support groups and things like that has been super helpful, because it's hard for the people around you to totally be able to support you and understand when they don't fully know what you're experiencing. And so for me to educate my friends thoroughly and for me to be open as possible has been incredibly helpful. I actually recently posted, after my heart procedure, like a quick little blob on Instagram to all my like friends and family about like, hey, this is what's been going on. And I know that has actually been really liberating for me because people know now and they can talk to me about it openly and I'm not scared to share that part of my life anymore. And so I think the education for able-bodied people to understand people who aren't able-bodied is the most crucial thing that people with disabilities can help do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that you are so eager to educate people in your life already. And I really love the idea of you going online and finding that support system, because that's honestly what I had to do. You know, you can have friends and family who love you very much, and I have that as well. But I found that, like, going online and finding people who are within the community really helped me sort of balance my own thoughts. So it was like, in a way, when my mom or my sister couldn't understand what I was specifically feeling about a bad disability day or like a bad, you know, like a bad, like my legs hurting or my knees hurting or my arms hurting, somebody online could, because they either have the same disability or they know what it's like to have a bad pain day. But I do hope that you're not putting too much pressure on yourself to constantly educate people. You know, I hope that you're taking days off where you're like, you know what, today I don't feel like explaining this one thing. Sometimes I just need to feel what I need to feel. So I do hope you're doing that. And I hope that you're realizing that you can teach people absolutely for however long you want to, but you don't always have to be like quote unquote on. You know what I'm saying?
I think that that's been a thing where I've had days where I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to have to explain this another time. And on those days, I think it's important for me to kind of understand in myself that it's not my job to do that all the time, and that I don't need to educate every single person around me, because some people just will never fully understand, and that's not my problem to deal with necessarily. And so I definitely do have those days where it's like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. I do think that's so powerful to give yourself that space for everyone listening, no matter what you're going through, to give yourself space, whether you're a woman or a person of color or a different, you know, different able-bodied, like always having to explain to people what you're dealing with or the obstacles you face is not always your job, and giving yourself the space to just feel in that place that you are in is so, so important. One of the things you mentioned in your question, which I think, you know, Kia just kind of touched on, are those days that feel so debilitating, that feel so hard. And I'm curious from Kia, what sort of tips, like tangible tips, can you give Abby in those moments when she's feeling like getting to class is too hard, when she's feeling like her body can't manage it, or when she's even feeling maybe insecure about using the placard or something like that?
It's going to sound wild, but the thing that helps me most in those moments is music. I literally will blast music in my headphones when I'm having a really bad day, because I feel like it calms me down. Shout out to Paramore, honestly. But yeah, that really helps to just sort of relax myself and remember that, like, it's going to be okay, even if it's not okay right now. And when you're feeling insecure about the placard or needing to do anything with regard to your disability, just remember that, like, as wild as this sounds, no one cares as much as you think they do. You know, they're not laying in wait thinking, hey, I saw Abby use a placard. Like, how dare she? Oh, I'm going to go run and laugh in her face. It feels like that in those moments. But I promise you that no one cares as much as you think they do. And that just means that you can go on with your life and use what you need to use so that you can propel yourself forward in your career, but also in life. Because you have to do what makes you able to do what you want to do. And if that placard helps, then just remember that it's a thing that you need. It's a tool that you can use to get to where you want to go. So yes, definitely music, talking to my friends about literally anything else. Pizza helps. So it's like, they don't have to be necessarily heavy things where you have to do like all this deep introspection. You can just do something that you enjoy for however long you need to. And that'll help you, I think, on the bad days, just trying to focus on something that makes you happy, whatever it is, as long as you're not, like, murdering people, whatever it is.
I think that's such a good motto for all of us, right? I think taking the fact that no one cares as much as you do is such an important concept for us all to embody. Right? Like, I think we all blow things up in our head and overthink things of how people are judging us. Whereas in reality, that's fiction. Because unless somebody tells you how they are feeling about you, it's not fact. Right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's important. And I love what Kia just said about not always having it have to be like deep introspection. Like, therapy is the best thing on the planet. Yeah. but so is Real Housewives. You know what I mean? Like, they're, yeah, sometimes they have the same effect, and it just really matters how you're feeling in that moment and what will make you feel best. Right? Does that resonate?
That definitely resonates, because I'm finally turning the corner where it's not so mentally draining to have a bad day. Because I used to beat myself up internally over it so much. I would be like, oh my God, did I not drink enough water last night? Did I not do this? Did I not do that? Why am I like this? What did I forget to do? Why did I let my body get this far? And so I'm finally turning the corner and being like, Abby, it's okay. It's what you have to deal with. It's your condition. You can't change it. And so you're going to live with it. And so a lot of times on those days, the introspective thoughts aren't the most helpful for me. So it's the listening to music. It's the making my friends come over. It's the going to a frat party the next day. Like, it's what makes me happy in the moment that is the most helpful thing to my condition when I have the bad days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, I think that's so hard to add, like, shame to it. You know what I mean? You're just adding something that you just don't need, and a burden that you don't need right now. Nobody needs shame in their life.
Exactly.
Especially if you're already dealing with a physical obstacle, adding in shame on top of it. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Right. That's too much work. And trust me, like, firsthand, I know exactly how you feel, especially when you're like, oh, I wish that my body would just not do this today. But I found too that, like with my friends and everything, I find it so much easier to literally talk about a TV show or a movie when I'm having like a really bad day. Like, let's just talk about The Good Place, which I'm so sad is over. And like,
me too.
Give me something that will allow me not to think about it.
Yeah,
it's sort of how I operate. And I feel like that, I'm sure, already helps you. But yeah, forcing your friends to come over, planning ahead to something fun you're going to do, all of that is great things that you can do when you're having those bad moments. And I totally approve.
Yeah, I love that. And I think for those of us listening who are able-bodied, the biggest takeaways are taking direction from those of our friends who do have different abilities of what they're feeling in that moment. Maybe they don't want, you know, maybe it's not time for your 20 questions about what they're going through. And while it's good intention, take direction from them. Ask them, do you want to talk about how you're feeling, or do you want to like sit back and watch The Bachelor, The Good Place, and listen to some music, whatever it may be, order some pizza. I think it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's okay to sort of like have that conversation. Like, what are you feeling like doing tonight? Because there may be a night when you're feeling like, I really want to talk about how my legs are feeling or how hot it was today or whatever, but there may be a night when you don't. And I think having like able-bodied friends ask, like, what do you want? Like, what would be best for you now is something that we, onus that we can take on ourselves to make your life somewhat easier.
I mean, yeah, my friends and I, we check in all the time. I'm like, hey, do you have time to talk about this? Or like, can you take this on? Or do you want to talk about literally anything else? That's what we do. So my friend the other day, I was having like a really bad pain day, and she talked to me about the lipsticks that she bought. And it made me feel so much better. Just a conversation about lipsticks.
I mean, lipstick's a great thing. I don't blame you. Abby, does that resonate with you?
Oh, for sure. I think that the most important thing is, yes, it is educating people, but it's also just people asking you what you want and being the most open as you can be about what your limitations are and what you want to do, because if that's what makes you feel better, it's worth it to be open and to have that open conversation. Like the other night, I got back from a really mentally and physically draining weekend, and my boyfriend texted me and was like, I got boba for you, like, come over, because he knew that that's what I needed in that moment. And so it's that type of thing where taking it day by day and being open about your needs and your wants is incredibly crucial to having good days and making the bad days seem less terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now, again, you're pretty close in proximity and temporally to your diagnosis, but moving forward, going into the rest of your college career, going into your career after college, Kia, can you give some tangible tips to leave us with and to leave Abby with for just sort of taking on life?
Ooh, yeah. I'm still sort of figuring it out myself. I mean, I'm only 28. But what I've learned so far is that not only was I able to get through college, but after college I was able to be successful because I do my work based on when my body will allow me to. Mm-hmm. And so it's about me finding a lot of patience with my body and knowing that sometimes I'll have to ask for extensions on essays or articles. Or when I was writing the book, I only gave myself like a small amount of a word count to do every day. And it's really just about entering the world post-college with a belief in yourself, but also just patience. Because even when I graduated, there was a year of time where I just didn't have a job. Like, I wasn't getting paid for anything, and it sucked. But I found that, like, in being patient with myself and in trying to remember that there were people, whether they were disabled or not, in the same boat as me, trying just as hard, you know, hoping that something was going to happen. It made me feel better because it made me feel like I was less alone. And so even when you feel that you're loneliest or you feel like you're not sure what's going to happen next, I think that's half of the adventure. Like, that's half the point, is that you don't know. But as long as you can believe, even if you can't believe in yourself right away, as long as you can believe in what you're doing, that will get you to where you need to go until you can start to believe in yourself. And so for me, I literally always say four things that I like about myself in the mirror, which is why the hashtag was created, really. I say four things that I like about myself. Three of them are physical. One of them is internal. So, like, I'm a loyal friend. I have nice eyes. I like my shoulders. I have great clothes. Something like that, just to remind you that you're a human person in the world. And who you are is valuable, and what you have to say has value. Just small reminders that you are going to be okay, and that even if you're not perfect, you're still so much worthy about who you are in the moment.
Wow, I love every bit of that, and I'm so grateful for you sharing your wisdom with us, Kia. I think everybody listening can take that away with them, as everybody, regardless of your ability, say four things that you love about yourself every day and remind yourself that you are human. And again, reminding yourself that it's all about patience. I love that. And for us that are able-bodied, it's okay to ask. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask what somebody would, how somebody can feel better that day, whether it's, you know, talking about lipstick or talking about what they may have gone through. And that is where you are going to be of help and of service, not in assuming, not in carrying around stigmas that society has ingrained in us, but by breaking that mold and asking some questions. I am so beyond grateful for both of you today. I'm just blown away by Abby for opening up and being so vulnerable, and Kia for helping us all understand how to navigate life, deal with our disabilities, all the while by being cute. You can find Kia on Twitter at Kia_Maria and buy her book, The Pretty One.
Please.
Yeah, everybody buy it. I'll put a link in this podcast description so that you can purchase it to make your life a lot easier. And if you guys have a question and want to be featured on the next episode, please send me a DM to @HannahCranston or email tmthshow@gmail.com. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And just a reminder, we'll be coming at you every Wednesday. So buckle up, because it's going to be too much to handle. See you next week. Oh,